Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is your host, Rav, recording this Friday morning here in Melbourne. Hope you are well wherever you are in the world, whatever time of day it is. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you've been enjoying, like myself, basking in the glory of what was just a ridiculously good win by Arsenal the other night in the Champions League. I'm still processing, right? 7-1 when we all thought we were all struggling to find a goal. And then all of a sudden, we absolutely thumped them, 7-1. It was just extraordinary. I've watched the highlights so many times. The Ethan Wanyeri goal, that's just a work of art. It's just a thing of beauty. Somehow, no matter how many times I see it, it still gets me every time. How did he get that much power off such a short backlift? Right? It was just amazing, and it's been a brilliant few days for the club. Just the type of momentum generator we've all been craving for, right? We know the challenges in the Premier League, and we know how, I think we've all come to our own sort of resignation that the title challenge is done. However, like I've continually said on this podcast, if you're a repeat listener, we have so much still to play for, right? Anything can and still will happen in the Champions League. I mean, no one saw 7-1 coming, right? Who's to say we cannot continue to surprise and whichever Madrid team is waiting for us in the next round? You know, let's just go all in. Let's support the club. Let's do our absolute best. And you just never, never know. So, look, a short podcast today, a shorter one. I'm just recording this intro because I've been asked by a couple of people, actually. Thank you so much for the feedback of my podcast earlier in the week. It ended up being quite a long one. It was over about 54 minutes. And the last segment of it was in relation to sporting director conversations, the composition of the Arsenal board. How did we get to this position, you know, when we've seen the things happen last summer? And of course, in the January transfer window, there was a really in-depth discussion I went into there. And from what the feedback that's been provided to me, again, thank you to those who reached out, is that it's probably worthy of just clipping that out and creating its own dedicated podcast for it. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm recording this intro, and then the next voice you will hear shortly after I sign off will be picking up where I left off in that podcast and just sharing. Look, again, full disclaimer, these are just my thoughts. This is just me connecting my own dots based on my read of the situation with Arsenal's board and the executive changes we've seen at the club in the last 18 to 24 months. So please take it with a grain of salt, right? I'm not pretending for a moment I'm an expert and I know better than anyone else. It's just what I've pieced together from what I've seen and heard and reported by the likes of David Ornstein and so on. Those sort of preeminent Arsenal journalists who cover the club so well. So it's just my thoughts on what has happened. It was originated from a listener question I received on Blue Sky. So please do enjoy that. I will sign off in a moment, and I'll be back on over the weekend to record another podcast as we gear up for the Manchester United, a huge, huge Premier League match against Manchester United this weekend. So until then, stay safe, stay well. Thank you so much, everyone tuning in, and I will see you on the next one. Thank you. And this has come about from a wonderful question that was sent to me on Blue Sky. I'll just make mention of that, actually. For the first time ever, I made a post yesterday evening in reference to recording today, and that were there any questions that anyone wanted me to cover. And look, I got to be honest, I was a bit scared to do that because, I mean, I actually also questioned, is anyone really finding these podcasts of value? Is anyone even going to respond or reach out? And thank you so much for the positivity I received from it. It really means a lot, right? Like I'm just an everyday dad over here in Melbourne, Australia, who loves the club, passionate about the club, and likes talking all things Arsenal. So that's where all of this is originated from, and I got wonderful reception to that that tweet. Thank you so much to Matt Orr, folks, who's been a supporter since the start, for retweeting. And this question is absolutely brilliant. I'll read it out word for word because I love the wording of this, and it's really helped in my head. It's helped me crystallize a lot of my thoughts that I've touched on in recent podcasts about Arsenal's transfer activity. So The question is from Arsenal Unfiltered on Blue Sky, and they have written, do you have a degree of sympathy for the club slash board? They took a risk and have since been made to look very silly. A bit of better luck in February and we might be hailing them if we can spend big in the summer. And yeah, look, absolutely. I was nodding my head as I read this question. Thank you so much, firstly, for commenting and for posting that. And it's really helped me to understand, just to help process my own thoughts on this, because in my head, something was just not quite right. Yeah, clearly, we all know that. Something has gone amiss. And the way this question was worded, especially in reference to the board level in terms of their participation in this, it really helped me figure out the missing piece in my head. So look, full disclaimer, clearly I'm not an ITK. I'm not in the know. I don't have all the answers. I'm all the way over here in Melbourne, Australia, right? So I'm a fan like all of us, but for me, I'm drawn upon my own experience in the corporate world. For those who may not have heard, I spent many years in a major bank here in Melbourne as a senior manager, and I know firsthand the importance of alignment between key executives, right? And how critical, how much a key transaction is predicated on all people being on the same page. And the Arsenal board level question, yeah, it really got me thinking, because Arsenal actually have, and I believe this has been designed on purpose, right? Arsenal have a board that is effectively made up of lawyers, right? Tim Lewis being the most significant factor in all of that. So Tim Lewis, just before I go to answer the specific question, and please bear with me because I'm most certainly going somewhere with this. It is important to recap why Arsenal's board is currently structured the way it is. Now, of course, we know the Cronkies, KSE, took full ownership of the club some years ago. And of course, Stan Kroenke is the outright owner, the ultimate decision maker of the club. He of course, resides in the US. We all know this, right? We all know that the KSE model, they own multiple clubs, key franchises in major sports, especially in the US. So, and of course, there was a major stadium, the SoFi Stadium, that entire development, that entire project, right? That was really, it seemed to be Stan's main focus over the last few years in overseeing and facilitating that. So with that in mind, look, I'm not covering anything groundbreaking here, of course, because we know for all intents and purposes, Josh is kind of the face of the ownership now, Josh Kroenke. He's been very active, much more active than we've seen Stan be, right, in the last few years. Especially from the Amazon documentary, of course, he had the nice slick suits and the slick back hair, right? So for all intents and purposes, it's Josh Kroenke who represents the family. That's not to say Stan doesn't have any involvement. I don't think the way, especially at this level, at this ownership sort of level, is that when a decision is made, of course, it needs to be sanctioned by the ultimate owner, right? However, he or she would heavily lean upon the advice and recommendation of their board members, who were put in place strategically, intentionally, to oversee the fine details, the key, you know, day-to-day runnings, operations of the club. And when for example, when a player is put in front of the board and needs his rubber stamp to approve it, he's not going to be across. Okay, let's say Calafiori, for example, he's signing last summer. He's not going to be across the key profiles, the key scouting data, his injury history, the price, the payment structure. You know, that's not really in his remit. Of course, he's going to be made aware of that in a summary, but it doesn't get to him for his signing off, for his rubber stamping, unless the key people around him, the likes of Tim Lewis, Josh, Richard Garlick, right, unless they've all sanctioned it, unless they've all said, yep, we've seen all the data, we've seen the pros and cons, and here is our recommendation, and he would quite likely go along with that. So that's usually the way it works at this sort of level. Now, where I'm going with this is, do we all remember Nicolas Pepe? I'm sure we all do, right? You might be wondering, why do I even reference him? Why do I bring him up now? Because what we see now, in terms of the current structure, the current, the executive function, the decision-making of the club, I believe much of this originates with what we have to say was a debacle of a signing. And this is, again, I don't go personal at players here. That's just not my vibe, right? This is nothing to do with Pepe himself, right? He was just clearly the wrong profile, the wrong player purchased at the wrong amount. And when I say wrong player purchased, I mean, I have to extend some sympathy and empathy here, speaking of those words, to Emery, because Emery didn't want him. Emery, all summer, he wanted Zaha. He wanted to redesign the team based on a right-footed attacker coming in off the left wing, right? He wanted Zaha for a very similar price point, I must say. Premier League proven. Zaha was much younger then, right? He was Palace's key man. Like he was the signing Emery wanted. For whatever reasons, and I know it gets a bit murky here because there's some legalities and probably some NDAs that were signed, right, and in Rahul Sanlehi's exit, right? For whatever reason, right, that transaction, the Pepe transaction, it cost the position of Rahul Sanlehi at the time, who, again, probably should never have been there. And that goes back to speak of the breakdown at board function, like why are we even in this position where we've got such misalignment between the coach and the individual signing players, because the coach wanted Zaha, right-footed, plays off the left. He was given Pepe, left-footed, plays off the right. And it's just basically saying, here you go, here's a club record signing, now make it work. And make it work along with the two previous club record signings, Aubameyang and Lacazette. We had a very misfunctioning, disjointed decision-making process, invested heavily in the forward areas of the pitch and basically told, now make it work. Now, I'm not saying this was the sole reason for Emery's struggles at Arsenal. That whole topic has been done to death as well, right? So I'm not going to go into that. What I'm trying to say is, I'm trying to keep this centered on how we've got to the current structure and decision-making we see at Arsenal. And I think that whole transaction, that whole debacle, watching Pepe struggle for many years, unfortunately. And because of how much we'd already spent in the forward department, we were basically stuck for a number of years, right, to effectively make that forward line work. And to the point where we were paying players to leave. We were cancelling contracts. Players were running down their contracts, not even getting into the matchday squads, right? We all know that era of Arsenal where it seems so long ago, doesn't it? But it was only just a few years ago where we had the likes of players on very hefty wages. We had Ozil, Socrates, Mustafi, I believe. You know, they weren't even registered. They weren't even getting in matchday squads. Kolasinac, another one. We were basically either waiting for them to go or had to pay them to go. Now, all of this is related because clearly there had been a mismanagement of Arsenal's finite resources. KSC have taken over, and they've seen that they under their watch, right? They've seen firsthand how Arsenal have wasted money, across the board here. So I think what's happened is, along with exiting Sanlehi at the time, and then making the structural changes we did, putting in Vinay. Edu took over as the technical director back then. I think from KSC's point of view, they were of the view that, you know what, we get it. We get why we need to exit these players, and we will sanction that Mikel. We will sanction that Edu, pay them off to leave. However, never again. We are not going to tolerate this again. And that's why they put in place Tim Lewis. So he's a lifelong fan of the club, of course. He's a very successful, very esteemed lawyer by trade. I believe Richard Garlick as well is a lawyer. So they were put in place for this reason. Because lawyers, and this is not to generalize, however, lawyers by nature are a bit more risk averse. They're much more considered. They're not reactionary. They will absorb and seek as much information as possible, right, for their own internal
risk assessment. They will look at the pros and cons. They will challenge you. They will go back to you with certain risks that you may not have thought about and ask you to mitigate them, right? How are you going to address this point or this point or this scenario? That is by nature how they operate. And I know this from experience too, right? Because I used to think I had all my bases covered, right? We're putting forward a term sheet or a deal sheet for a transaction to our lawyers, our advisors, or to my credit executives, right? To say, yep, this is a goer, this is a done thing. You know, when can I get final approval, and then I can go and ring them today and say, yep, it's approved, and let's all get this finalized. It doesn't work that way, right? It just doesn't. Especially sometimes the bigger the institution and the more money involved, the more layers of protection there is, because the club cannot afford to keep getting transactions wrong, such as that era I've mentioned a number of times with Pepe and the other forwards. We cannot allow that. So in doing so, I'm bringing this right back down to the question now, empathy and sympathy at board level. I think what's happened is there's been a clear edict from the board over the last few years along the lines of, okay, Mikel, okay, Edu, we understand why we need to exit some of these players who are, I guess, at different stages of their careers. They're on big, big money. We've given them the big contract extensions. They're not even contributing on the field anymore, right? We need to exit them. We don't like having to, you know, cut them a check and pay them out of the contracts and get no resale value from them, but we'll do it because you've put forward a proposal to ensure this doesn't happen again. We are going to invest heavily on the players of a younger age bracket, the under 23s, et cetera. And we all saw that summer, that very significant summer, where it signaled a change in direction for Arsenal. We signed a host of players under that profile, and we were prepared to pay the premiums that came with it to sign the likes of English players, Premier League proven, $50 million for Ben White, for example. We got Ramsdale. We got the likes of Tomiyasu, relatively cheap. Odegaard, of course, who's proven to be a bargain, really, for notwithstanding his struggles the last few months, right? But the Odegaard transaction is an absolute overwhelming success, right? It really is. There's no other way to put that. So the point I'm referencing here is that in justifying to the board why we are pivoting this way and exiting these players and paying them off, we are investing heavily into these players. And in turn, that's going to see us not only have, well, obviously the basics are a cohesive team unit, right? You can't tell me any team succeeds on the pitch with such fractures behind the scenes, players training by themselves and all the cliques and dressing room leaks. Like, that's absolutely toxic, right? So that's the most obvious. When you bring together a younger group of players, the camaraderie, the enthusiasm, the motivation, completely different, right? And the fans buy in because you see yourselves in that, especially with Haaland talent, Smith Rowe, Nketiah, Saka, Nelson, right? They were all heavily involved in that early stage of the Arsenal rebuild, if you want to refer to it as that. So everyone was on board, and the trajectory has been phenomenal since. We've returned to Champions League. Our revenues are through the roof, right? The numbers the club published a few weeks ago, it's outstanding, the performance of the club, right? We are so well positioned. And it looks like, well, again, touch wood, that we are here to stay for the next little bit in terms of the trophy conversations, Champions League and the Premier League. So that's all been justified. That's all been proven. And I believe that in terms of what promises Arteta and Edu delivered to the board at that time, I believe they've delivered them in terms of Arsenal's rebuild. Sure, we've stopped short of winning the title, and now we're so close now, right? So you can't just abandon everything. You can't just pack it up and go home and start again. That's not what should happen, I don't get the sense that's what's going to happen at all. However, I'm bringing it back down now to the question about sympathy for board level. So last summer, we finished 2 points off Manchester City. And we've seen how close Mikel is with the ownership, right? That's very obvious. And I believe there's a number of times in the year when all the schedules allow that Arteta flies over to the US, You sometimes see him pictured in various corporate boxes with the owners, right? But there's a 1 or 2 day conference or summit, whatever you want to call it, right? Where key representatives from Arsenal, I'm sure Vinay's been there, Edu's been there before, Richard Garlick probably most recently, Tim Lewis would be there, Arteta himself, and they would all converse, right? Like, you know, where are we placed? What do we want to do? You know, what are you thinking, Mikel? You know, present to us what your plans are. Let's strategize. And in terms of addressing the question, how can we now overcome this very narrow two-point margin? What's going to get us over the line, Mikel? He would have presented to them his plans for the likes of the profile of Mikel Merino in midfield, the profile of Calafiori. Now, I don't believe that was received as well as, it wasn't as, clearly to me, it wasn't as unanimous as it quite often is, right? As it has been over the last few years. And to me, that was evident with how long those transactions took. Sure, there's always reasons why transactions take time, you know, negotiations stall sometimes. Everyone wants a clip, right? Commission, agents, representatives, you know, the way a payment's structured. Sure, there's always reasons. There was Euros last year, of course, too, right? So there's a number of reasons. However, there was enough noise around Mourinho and Calafiori. You know, there was enough noise about that to suggest that he was having a hard time convincing the powers that be, including Edu, that this is the right profile to make. And I think what's happened is, at board level, something, look, I'm just using layman's terms here, right? Just something along the lines of, at board level, they've gone, really? Another fullback, Mikel? Are you serious? Another one? Another left back? And in doing so, they've gone back to him to say, look, we will support this, however, and here's the key, however, you need to make space in the squad. There are so many players that we've seen just frozen out over time by Arteta, and their transfer values tank. And, you know, we've been notoriously bad sellers, something the club has been trying to address. And I actually think we've done really well with the value we extracted for the likes of Balogun recent years and Kedia, Smith Rowe, right? So I actually think that's something Edu did quite well in what was his final window at the club. So, but anyway, the point I'm getting at is here, clearly things weren't as aligned. And they've gone back to him and said, you must exit some players. You know, we've got to sell to buy. And I don't think Edu was on board for the type of players that Arteta was signing either. We know we tried hard with Šeško, and that's been covered as well, right? Why that didn't happen. And I believe we'll go back in hard for him, hopefully early this summer window. But we clearly had a fracture between the two, right? And that was evident in the way this goalkeeper search for Juan Garcia ended up. Like, it was just bizarre. 30 million euro release clause for a second choice goalkeeper. I think people will look around and go, like, well, what are you doing, Mikel? Like, well, how many more? This is on top of when we finalized the 30 million for David Raya, right? Which I'm not questioning, of course. He's a world-class goalkeeper. That conversation is done and dusted now. I'm not even revisiting that. It was brilliant, and he is brilliant. What I'm saying is, then on top of that, how much turnover we've seen in goalkeepers, fullbacks, and now a second goalkeeper for that price when we've neglected the attack. And the very fact that then at the last minute, we've seen Edu basically pull the pin on that. He was the one, from all reports, who made the phone call to Neto, his compatriot, right? They're Brazilian, right? And he's the one who's signed him on a loan deal. And he's basically put the kibosh on anything else. Now, that was really bizarre, because from everything I've heard so far, right, it's always Mikel on the phone. When he wants a player, he sells them their vision. He will talk to them and he will scout them first. Like, he will, he'll court them first. That's the word I'm looking for. So the fact that Edu took over, pulled the pin on this one, did himself. Like, there's enough you know, rumors and rumblings around this to suggest that things were just not, they were not okay. And I believe that's been proven, because 2 months later, you know, Edu's tendered his resignation. I actually think, you know, as much as Arsenal tried to increase his wages and they promoted him before to the sporting director, right? Clearly his ambitions were, well, he's joining that multi-club model now. So I think he had sort of eyesight on something of that ilk or a CEO type level, which wasn't possible at Arsenal. But I think the board they've pushed back for the first time in a while. They've pushed back hard on Arteta and Edu, and I don't think Edu and Arteta were aligned on these choices. And look, as it turns out, this is, again, not to disparage Calafiori or Mourinho. I see their strengths and I can see the logic in acquiring them. However, the fact that they were our only signings, that's the issue. It shouldn't have been one or the other, right? We needed an attacker. We needed that for Edu to admit that we didn't have any intention of signing Sterling on a loan, right? Like that's telling for me. Like that's utterly bizarre. It shouldn't have happened. And for us to only end up with a panic loan of Sterling, who unfortunately is just a non-factor at the moment. Calafiori and Mourinho, yes, they've been unlucky with injuries. However, you know, we had such gaping holes in the squad that weren't addressed. And understandably now there are questions when you look back on and you think, well, if we only had such finite resources, why did we spend combined 70, 80 million on a left back and a central midfielder when we could have put that towards an attacker? And I understand that. I wish I had a good answer for that. Unfortunately, it's what's happened. So yes, look, to bring it down to the question, yes, I do have some sympathy, empathy for the board, because I believe if my theory is correct, right, I at least think they've been consistent. They have conveyed that message to Arteta and Jason Ayto and all others involved that this is what we are seeking, right? If you can provide the right battle plan to address what they've been tasked with, they will sanction a move. Now, January was an utter colossal failure, right? Even if we still had Martinelli and Havertz fit, I just think it was such a poor decision to assume that they're going to be able to do this at this level with this volume of minutes for the next 3 to 4 months. It was just a poor, poor decision. So the logic behind it, unfortunately, we're just not going to know until the summer, because I think the best case scenario for all parties here just to come out with their reputations a little bit enhanced is that once the summer window opens, what I'm hoping to see is that we get the likes of Zubimendi, we get the likes of Šeško done nice and early, because in finalizing those deals, what will quite likely happen, if so, is that we will probably hear things about how much groundwork has been put in previous months, how much groundwork, how far advanced negotiations are with all parties, their representatives, the clubs, etc., referencing January as well, referencing how close we work together in this time. And I think that gives a sense of justification that if it wasn't going to happen now, look, at least we put in all stops now. We did as much as we could to then facilitate a nice, easy, quick transaction to finalize in the summer. And maybe then we can have a bit of, we can look at this scenario and the board's involvement. We can look at that with a bit more positivity, because if we don't, right, if we don't address those failures, like I said, the ramifications are huge. So look, I appreciate this is getting quite long now, this podcast, my longest one yet, so I'll wrap it up there. I do hope I covered that question adequately. Please do let me know if there's anything else you'd like me to talk about and cover. Thank you so much for anyone who's made it this far and listened this far. If you're listening on a podcast app, I would very much welcome a review, please, if you'd be so kind. It really does help in the search listings. Or like and subscribe, comment on YouTube. That would be most, most appreciated from my point of view. And just look, again, thank you to everyone who continues to support the podcast and just sends nice messages of feedback. It really does mean a lot. I'm really enjoying doing this, and thank you so much for listening. For now, wherever you are in the world, have a wonderful day or end to your weekend, and I'll talk to you on the next one. Thank you so much, and come on, Arsenal.